Awesome, like podcasts and stuff?
I've seen people with podcasts less desperate for approval.
I hope this isn't about your podcast again.
Please, podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Welcome to the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Ben Heisler.
What is good, everybody? It's the Awful Announcing Podcast, episode number 46. My name is Ben Heisler. I'm glad that you guys are once again with us. And we'll be joined in a moment by MLB Network's Greg Amsinger, now in year number 11 with MLB Network. And the dude's got some really good stories to tell. Also, don't forget Major League Baseball postseason is coming up, and MLB Network is going to be carrying two playoff games over the course of the postseason as well. Always a lot of fun with their coverage throughout the MLB postseason. And listen, we had a lot of fun on this one. Greg and I got into some of the crazy stuff from his upbringing that really changed the trajectory of his life and of his career. There was one thing that he talked about how he really felt like he wanted to completely adapt a different type of style that we don't see from most anchors and hosts on television. So we got into that, talked a lot of baseball as well. He's got some great opinions, really unique stuff. And he's also very passionate about what he does, how he presents the show that he's a part of. And he's also a tremendous interview. So I'm excited to have you guys hear our conversation momentarily. Friendly reminder that you can find everything you enjoy about Awful Announcing at awfulannouncing.com. We are on Twitter at Awful Announcing. And if you'd like to follow me, you can do so at Benny Heiss. Also, if you enjoy the podcast or you have some things that you'd like us to improve on, which we can always, maybe have some requests on who you'd like us to try and have on next, go ahead and rate and review us in Apple Podcasts. We appreciate the comments more than you know. They help make the show better, more entertaining, more informative. So please do rate and review the show over at Apple Podcasts. I've been watching this guy for the last several years, and it started when I first started working at MLB Network Radio as a producer, and then have since continued to follow his work since moving to Kansas City back in 2014. And you can watch Greg host MLB Tonight leading up to and during the postseason. Plus, MLB Network will exclusively air two American League Division Series games during the postseason as well. Greg Amsinger is our guest on the Awful Announcing Podcast. Is it crazy, man, to think that you've been at MLB Network now for 10 years?
You know, Ben, first off, thank you for the kind words. I look in the mirror and go, yeah, I have been there for 11 years. You know, we all age a little bit. So 11 years at MLB Network. I never thought I'd work anywhere for 11 years. I remember seeing my dad come home from a factory growing up, and he worked at the same factory for like 22 years. I'm like, I don't know if I'll ever have the same job for a year and a half, let alone 22 years. But when you find something that fits, you know, you stay, and I couldn't be happier here.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think I heard a podcast that you did a while back that all of this, being a part of a sports network and being a television personality, that really, like you said, none of this was written in your plans. You had mentioned that nobody in your family had gone to college, that your dad had worked at a factory for many years, and you had planned to work in that same factory. So I'm curious, when did the light bulb go off that you wanted to do something else, that you wanted to do and be involved in this kind of work?
I had a great high school teacher named Dr. Gary McKitty. And he pulled me aside and he said, Greg, you can speak for a living. I'm like, well, that's good, because I can't hammer a nail. I can't balance a checkbook. I'm really not good at anything else. He said, you need to be in front of a camera, on stage, do something. It led to me acting in high school. I did a couple plays, got attention from a college, picked the college because I had a great radio station, because I didn't know if I wanted to go all in and do acting. So I did play-by-play in radio, was a late-night disc jockey. It led to a career that I never would have predicted. I have played my entire life and career like I'm the underdog. I come from very humble beginnings, one of seven kids. And to be where I'm at now, let me tell you, that there are a lot of broadcasters when I was a kid growing up that I never looked like they were appreciating the seat that they had for whatever game. I'd give anything to be at. So I want fans to watch me knowing that I understand I have a bucket list job, and every single day I do not take that for granted.
I love that. I love, and I think it shows through in a lot of the work that you do. There's an infectious personality that you try and bring out when you're with the guys at the table, and it's a lot of fun. And you brought up the fact that you said you're one of seven siblings in your home?
Yeah, I've got five brothers and a sister. She's the youngest. My parents kept working until they got the girl, and they finally did.
So I would imagine that a lot of it came from trying to get a bit of attention when you were at home, too. You had to fight through a lot of noise to be able to get there.
Yeah, it's weird. I was the biggest one. I'm the second oldest, and I had the loudest voice. My voice actually got higher when I hit puberty. I'm not even kidding.
That's remarkable.
Isn't that remarkable?
How'd you get so lucky?
I sound like a frog, okay? And when I was like in third grade, the eighth graders would pull me up, Greggy, come here, and they'd have me say like curse words, and I'd say them and repeat them, and they would all die laughing because my voice was so hysterical. I was a very big boned, heavy set young man, and I had flat feet, wore special shoes. I mean, I was just a hot mess. I got to tell you, hot mess. So I just had – it was a good thing for me. It helped develop my personality. That's the way I looked at it. I didn't get attention for being the cutest kid, for, being the baby of the family. It's weird. I kind of created a relationship with my parents as if I was the third adult in the house. And from that point, I became like a role model for my younger siblings, and I got taller, played sports, wanted to do well. So they would look, because I knew they looked up to me, and I coached their basketball teams. I drove them around, took them to the park. I made sure I went to college in the same town I went to high school because I wanted to help my siblings. So it created a leadership quality that I think helps me today in what I do for a living.
Well, not only that, you mentioned the acting classes. So much of live television is reacting and not necessarily having everything scripted in front of you, which I want to ask you about in a little bit. But how much did that help in moving on in your career, knowing that you had the ability to adjust on the fly whenever you needed to?
It's imperative. I can't even begin to tell you all the little nuances of acting and how that has helped me in my broadcast career. It's not that I'm playing a role. My role model growing up was Jack Buck, the play-by-play guy, the St. Louis Cardinals. I idolized him. I got a chance to work with him when I was a producer at KMOX Radio, and he was this larger-than-life, authentic guy, and it came through on the air, and I didn't want to pretend to be like anybody else. I have a big personality. I just want to be Greg. But from acting, what it taught me was that when you're on camera, you're communicating to people. When you're not speaking, there is a way to broadcast that you always should acknowledge the way you look while you're on TV. Not that you're playing to the camera, but there are moments where don't look down at your notes if Harold Reynolds is really going off on a topic he cares about. Make sure you're locked in because people see you. They want to see that it matters to you. So acting always gave me this idea of what do I look like right now? And that's a big skill to kind of develop. And it's a hard thing for young broadcasters that don't have the acting chops.
Well, the other component too is, and I talked about this with Jason Benetti at the beginning of the month, the sort of the yes and philosophy when you're doing, you know, improv style comedy, right? Like it's all about reacting. It's all about taking what you hear and being able to shape that and move it towards something else as opposed to just ending it and looking at your notes and moving on.
Right. Yeah, I tell people all the time, people ask me, what do you think about right before the show starts? I go, nothing. I let my mind go completely blank. Like, come on, man. I'm like, no. It is verbal diarrhea. I have a strength, and it is reacting. If I scripted everything I said, it'd be so corny, hokey, and bad that it would be terrible. I have to feel – I always say this. I say what I feel. I don't say what I think. I say what I feel. And it's the instinctual part of broadcasting that I feel like is a strength for me. And I will say this. The crew, I've been in studios where there is no crew, and it just doesn't feel the same to me. I'm not as comfortable. They're my live studio audience. When I'm live on television, yeah. I know people can see me through a camera. I get that. But I am trying to entertain all of the men and women that work in our studio crew. And if I get them laughing, I know I won. So I am catering to those people.
All right, so let me follow up on that really quickly, because you said like this is not something that is easy to learn for a young broadcaster. When did it hit you? When did you realize that this is how I have to be on air? I have to be more reactive. I have to be more instinctual as opposed to over-prepping everything.
Well, it's a great question. I got a gig in local TV in Terre Haute, Indiana. Quickly made the jump from there to New York City. And when I auditioned for a startup sports network called CSTV, I did not think I'd get that job. I was 24 years old. They already had legit broadcasters going through. They had a soft launch. They were already doing shows. And I kind of got into the audition mix late. And on the flight there, I'm 24. I'm thinking to myself, if I do this the way everyone else does this, I'm not going to get the gig. Yeah, I'm a young guy, and maybe I have talent, but I have to bring something that no one else is bringing. So I didn't write any scripts. I ad-libbed everything, and they thought I was insanely lazy at first because I showed up and I had a co-host, and my college baseball analyst that day was Jim Laritz. And we were doing a whole college sports show. I'm talking about college volleyball, college lacrosse, you name it. And I decided to wing it. And I was well-read. I was prepared. But I felt like the only way I can get this is if I stand out and use a skill that I have that maybe other broadcasters don't have. I played like I was the underdog. So ad-libbing has been the secret to my success. And I try to get young broadcasters off the teleprompter. Yes, there are moments when it's a serious news story that you do not want to mess around
right. And
get the facts incorrect. Totally understand that. But if you get to do a studio show with an analyst, let's relax a little bit. I don't need to type it. I'm live in Studio 3 with Harold Reynolds and Dan Plesak. I don't need to write that in the prompter. So start there and work your way to not needing the binky. And that's what I think the teleprompter is. And that really helped me. It gave producers flexibility live on television. When they know that you can just move from one thing to the next based on time, or if they can get in my ear and go, hey, Greg, this story, I only got 10 seconds before you have to go to break. Can you do it in 10 seconds? Yeah, absolutely. Right? Instead of having a 25-second script that now the producer has to edit to get to 10 seconds. So ad-libbing opened the door for me to do national television because so few broadcasters are really willing to do it.
The other component too, and there's so many follow-ups that I have here, but when did you obviously there's a level of comfort here for you to be able to go in and you say you were winging it, but in a sense you had still prepared, right? Like when did you know that this is something that you could just, I imagine initially you probably wanted to have more preparation than not, but like when were you able to move past that and say like, all right, I'm not nervous about this new gig. I'm ready. I'm confident. I'm fully prepared to be able to do whatever I need to do. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it totally makes sense. I wasn't thinking about my performance. I was thinking about the content. I got lost in the content. So if I was talking about, if one of the stories we were going to talk about was the NCAA Division I Women's Volleyball Tournament coming up, I wanted to get into it, research it, and then have a take on it. So I wanted to go off on, like, I really hope we get to women's volleyball. I hope they don't cut that from the B block because I want to go off on the University of Nebraska's program and talk about how we're all losing our minds for USC football at the time or Vanderbilt baseball. But we need to acknowledge one of the greatest, if not the greatest, college programs in all of sports is University of Nebraska women's volleyball. Like, that's how I decided to go about my career. I wanted to dive into the content and have a passionate take on everything and kind of have my fandom come out on no matter what the sport was. And because I was a fan, I wasn't working anymore. I wasn't trying to remember the coach of the University of Nebraska. I was so into this topic that I would know his name and know how long he was there. And I want to tell you why I think we're not talking about University of Nebraska volleyball enough. So it was integrating the opinion of a host, which wasn't done a ton. You know, there weren't many studio hosts that didn't play college sports that were just giving their opinion. But again, I was trying to carve out a niche at a time, and I got a lot of pushback. I got to be honest. There were producers that didn't like it. But I just felt like if I was playing the game like so many other young broadcasters, it was a game I was going to lose inevitably. So I married this approach and it ended up working.
Can you take us through those conversations that you would have with producers
yeah,
and APs?
Yeah, absolutely.
And going through that?
I've had coordinating producers walk up to me and go throughout my career and go, hey, just so you know, tee up the analysts. We don't need to hear what you think. No one cares what you think. And my response would be, well, then I'm not the guy for you because you gave me a microphone. I don't understand why you're going to pay somebody to wear a microphone, but yet you don't care what that person thinks. What? No, I guess I'm not the guy. So my point was, if I broadcast the way I feel that works, someone will pay me to do their show the way I want to do it. And, you know, it's not one size fits all. There are a lot of great studio hosts that I admire because of the way they do their job and the way that I don't want to do my job the way they do theirs. And they probably don't want to do their job the way I do mine. It's comfortability. It's understanding your own skill set and getting the most out of it. And I just felt like, you know, reading a teleprompter and being the anchorman in a studio, which I love studio TV, was just going to be way too much fun on the cutting room floor for me. And I just didn't want to have a career like that.
Were there producers that was telling you, like, this would be more of a radio style format for you as opposed to television? And I know you spent some of those years at KMOX as the Cardinals producer, but was there ever a thought of doing more radio because you had a longer platform to be able to give more of your opinions?
Yeah, I went from, you know, doing some acting to radio. And radio was my first love. And I'm telling you right now, I still miss it to this day. I to entertain with just your voice is such a tough thing to do. I mean, in television, the bells and whistles are all there. You know, I can have my producer go, all right, we're off the air in 5, 4, and I can just shut up at 5. They got a jib shot. They've got all the different fancy tools that can bleed you all the way to the end, and no one ever knows. But in radio, you got to hit the post. And to me, that's a fun game. I love it. It's a great medium. It's just the way my career ended up moving. It just kind of snowballed in television. Do I think I'd ever do radio again? I would, if the opportunity came that fit my lifestyle, I would be very open to it. I really enjoy it. But, you know, that's the beauty of this industry. There are so many different aspects to it that I enjoy that it's clearly the right industry for me.
Well, there's also something cool about going straight from acting into radio by nature of radio being theater of the mind, right? Like, you already have that natural transition in. So I think it's cool to hear that it's something that you're definitely open to. You've also
I talk to young broadcasters all the time. You should do radio. Every broadcaster that wants to do television should do radio, because the one thing that is inevitable in television is the stuff's not going to work. Every once in a while, the plan falls apart. And if you have the chops to do an hour of sports talk radio, then you have the chops, and when they pop you on camera because the tape didn't roll, to fill that time and be charismatic and for people at home not to know that the control room's freaking out.
You met a couple people that at CSTV that I don't necessarily think people know started there, and Adam Zucker and Michelle Beadle. What were they like back in the day?
Well, it's crazy to think about the way our network started. I mean, the first group of core broadcasters was me, Michelle Beadle, Adam Zucker, and Catherine Tappan, who
is
one of the most talented broadcasters in the industry. I've said this many times, and Adam Zucker and I are still very close friends. Michelle Beadle, so much fun. My wife and Michelle, good friends, have gone on ski trips together. The two most talented people I've ever worked with in this industry. And what I mean by talent is, they are exactly what they are off camera, on camera. The two most talented people I've ever worked with, Harold Reynolds and Michelle Beadle. Those two, no matter what I throw at them, their ability to listen is so high, to not ever worry what they're going to say next because they know they're going to come up with something. It's just incredible talent. And Michelle Beadle, to this day, people ask me about her. I mean, she's a superstar. I mean, and that is only because I can't come up with a better word. She is so good and so funny and so quick that, I mean, a rock star in the industry, in my opinion. And Harold Reynolds, I mean, I've never heard another person who has a bigger smile in their voice than Harold Reynolds, who I think someday will be in the Hall of Fame. He'll be in the broadcaster's wing of Cooperstown.
I know you can't necessarily pick favorites, but I mean, it seems like when you're working with Harold, that's always been the guy that you're playing off of the most, because you know that he's immediately going to come back with something. Do you feel like that's true?
Well, aside from the fact that he is my, you know, I've got two best friends at work here, Three. I'm insanely close. Four, I guess, because I can't forget Al Leiter. But, you know, my relationships with Harold Reynolds and Dan Plesac, Sean Casey and Al Leiter, it's just they mean the world to me. They're brothers I never had, and I got five of them. Right? So it's like crazy. But Harold is my, you know, best friend in the world, and our families are close, and our sons are great friends. And aside from the fact that he's such an amazing human being, I admire his television talent. I'm blown away by how good he is. So to sit next to him for all these years and just watch him do his thing, you got to know television to understand the brilliance of Harold Reynolds. He is incredible at his job. He's so good that there's a reason he wins all these Emmys. I mean, if you understand TV, you understand that he plays at a different level. He's just that good. So, yes, being on television with Harold is like a day off. He does so much of the hosting for me. He's such a co-host that it's something I'll never forget. I'm a 40-year-old man. He's older than I am. So in 20 years when I'm still doing this, hopefully, to tell people about Harold Reynolds and how great he was, I will not take that for granted.
So in the next 20 years, let's say this turns into a 31-plus career over at MLB Network, what would you like to be able to do that you haven't done yet at the network? What would you like to see MLB Network evolve into as time goes on? Have you thought about that at all?
That's a really good question. You have a lot of good questions, Ben. Wow. Listen, I
appreciate it.
As much as I want to, I hate the word complacency. I don't want to be complacent ever in my life. I never, ever want that. Now, that said, I am so blessed to have the opportunity to have the keys to the Porsche. And that's how I feel when I get to host MLB Tonight. The format of this incredible broadcast, of this incredible show, it's such an honor to do it. To sit in a chair and know that you're about to go down a roller coaster ride, you have no idea what's about to happen tonight. You have no idea. And you have to love baseball, which I do, to sit there for 3 hours every night during the summer and hang out with your best friends and talk baseball and have no idea what's coming next. It kind of fits my brain. It really does. And I don't want to sit here and say that there's no more evolution of Greg Amsinger, but I can't envision a format that would be better suited for me than this. I genuinely mean that. Maybe if I added like an interview show where I got to actually sit down and do a one-on-one interview with a player or someone that was important, maybe that would be something that I'd like to sink my teeth into because I love interviewing people. But in terms of the nuts and bolts of my career and the bread and butter of what I do at MLB Network, I feel like I've won the lottery getting to host MLB Tonight.
All right, let me change the perspective a little bit, not necessarily make it about how you or the station want to involve, but let's talk about baseball itself because I think the beauty of baseball that people sometimes fail to understand and to truly get is that baseball has evolved over time, and it's gotten better over time. And whether you believe that the current way in which baseball is being played, that the ball is not put in play as often as it has before, that you're seeing more launch angle, you're seeing more home runs, that's a perfectly debatable argument. That's fine. But I guess I'm confused as to why people wouldn't want to see baseball evolve to become better for the current generation that it's in and to create more new fans.
Yes.
Why do you think there's so much pushback?
Anytime you want to take something that's part of the fabric of our country and alter it in any way, there are purists in every sport, in every industry. And some people think if it's not broken, why fix it? I completely agree with you, and I think we've got the perfect commissioner for this. Rob Manfred is a visionary, and he understands that if the youth are into this sport, the future is brighter. He just gets it. And anywhere he decides to go, because I've been lucky enough to hang out with the commissioner, and his passion for getting young people playing the sport young people talking about the sport, young people watching the sport, young people working in the sport is so clear that I don't look at any future decision as fixing baseball, and neither does he. It's evolving, the word that you used. It's taking this great sport to levels it's never been before. So I agree the game is better than I can ever remember it. Now, I grew up in the 1980s loving the St. Louis Cardinals, where Jack Clark was the only home run hitter, and Tommy Herr had 10 home runs and drove in over 100 batting third, and Vince Coleman would bunt for a hit and it'd become a triple because he stole second and third in the next two pitches. Right. Like, this is the kind of small ball stuff I loved. But we still see dynamic athletes. We still see incredible pitching performances. We still see home run races. We see better athletes. I mean, frankly, the average baseball player can do more things than the baseball player back in the day. So why are home runs up? People want to point to a baseball. I think it's incredible velocity. Back in the day where there were three guys throwing over 95 miles an hour back in 1985, we've got 300 guys throwing over 95 miles an hour if you count the minor leagues. You've got incredible velocity. You've got pitchers that understand that the hitters have analytics on their side, so they're changing their launch angle, their swing path. They're getting this incredible velocity in the air where it gives them a better payoff. There are a lot of elements to why the game is where it's at, but everything's cyclical. Mike Soroka isn't giving up home runs this year. Mm-hmm. He's not throwing 98 miles an hour. Dakota Hudson isn't giving up home runs this year. He's not throwing 98 miles an hour. So there are guys that can figure it out. And I think what you're going to see is the game go, wait a minute, maybe we do need more Dallas Keuchels in our rotation. And I believe in the game. I think the game fixes itself in many ways. And whatever new ideas come to alter it, I'm all for. And I think the commissioner is the perfect guy for the job.
I'm glad that you brought that up, that the game continues to evolve and move in circles. And like coming up from a guy that grew up in Chicago, I love watching Kyle Hendricks pitch because it's such a throwback to something that we just don't see every day. And you brought up Keuchel and you brought up Soroka. All those guys, just by doing something inherently different, and even if you get a guy that's throwing a knuckleball every so often, too, like changing up the timing is the quintessential part of baseball pitching, right? Like you're doing something that's trying to throw somebody off, and it's different than everybody else, so there's a natural adjustment there.
Look, Dan Plesac has a great term for what became in vogue in baseball when it comes to pitching. That was dead brain heavers. guys that could throw 98 miles an hour but weren't heavily scouted in terms of being a first or second round pick because they had no secondary pitches. And I think what we're starting to find as teams like the Houston Astros continue to thrive, they want their pitchers who all throw hard to spin the ball more. We want those secondary pitches. Well, that's one part of the equation. What we're starting to see is there are guys that can spin a baseball without incredible velocity and be equally as effective. Now, does that mean they're going to strike people out? No. Hyunjin Ryu is having a remarkable year that isn't being talked about enough because he had a stretch of four starts that were really bad. But this is a guy that at one point, well past the All-Star break, had an ERA barely over 1.5. Now, we've never seen a guy have an ERA that low the way he was doing it. Bob Gibson was the last guy to have an ERA under 1.5 that was so dominant. He had a 1-1-2, they had to lower the mound. All the guys that flirted in that area were strikeout pitchers, right, in the history of the game. Pedro Martinez, strikeout pitcher. Hyunjin Ryu isn't striking people out. He's just missing the barrel. He's getting weak contact, which I think is going to become much more noticed, discussed, and coveted in the game today. If we know where to position infielders, and that's happening for years now, the shift, then why are we looking for guys that are all or nothing? They're going to strike people out, either walk them, or they're going to give up a homer. Why not use this defense that's perfectly positioned if we can find a pitcher that's going to miss the barrel? So, like I said, it's all cyclical. It's going to get back to the days of John Tudor vying for Cy Youngs again. These soft tossers, it is going to come back, and I'll have a huge grin on my face when it does.
There's so many things that I want to be able to talk to you about. I know we have a limited amount of time, so I'll get you out on a couple more.
Take your time. I'm not in a rush. Enjoy.
So I want to run an idea by you, and I feel like you're the perfect guy to ask this about because you host MLB Network's draft coverage. First of all, you guys have this great studio in-house, but one idea I have is maybe shake it up a bit, get it into a more festive atmosphere, make it feel like a celebration, because that's what an NFL draft is. That's what an NBA draft. I feel like baseball could have that same type of celebratory feeling in a more festive atmosphere. That's my first idea.
Yeah, I think it's a great one. It's something that has been kicked around, I think, for every year we've been doing the draft. I've done it for 11 years now, and that's something that's always on the table. They're looking for the perfect spot, but eventually, I believe, it will go to a different location that will have more access to fans and players, which will be exciting. I look forward to that day. I think baseball understands that it has an asset, and it's only growing because all of these young amateur players in the high school and college ranks, which years ago, decades ago, were nowhere near being household names, are getting more traction. They're on YouTube. They're getting more attention before they even hit their senior year of high school. So it's a growing product that I'm proud to be part of for the past 11 years that's only getting bigger, and I would be shocked if it wasn't in a bigger venue in the next couple of years.
All right, so you brought up something that leads to the second idea of how to change the MLB draft. You talked about where the action is. Why not hold the draft during the Major League Baseball All-Star break? Like, you could have the entire landscape of baseball in one place celebrating the new future stars of baseball. Is that something that's been kicked around as well?
Well, to do it then alters, when you get your hands on these draft picks, send them down to rookie ball. You know, it's delaying that process. So that's time that Major League teams covet. But once again, this is a calendar of a sport that's viewed almost like the Holy Grail in the same way the rules of baseball are viewed like untouchable. Oh, don't change anything. I mean, to me, if there's one, the first thing I would change is Induction Sunday, there are no games. You should allow every single baseball player to make the trip to Cooperstown to be in attendance to watch their favorite hero go into the Hall of Fame. To me, that's the first thing. That just doesn't make sense. But because it's always been that way, it's hard to change things.
Right.
So do I think that would be something? The baseball calendar, the baseball schedule is something that will definitely be tinkered with, and it already has been. As we continue the ebbs and flows of how to make this even better than it already is. I mean, the one trade deadline, I dig that.
Yeah, I
totally
do too.
Love that. I think that altered things dramatically. So I don't want to say the right people are figuring this out, but the right people are taking this to a level we've never seen before.
All right, a few quick ones on the way out. You were the producer, like we mentioned, for Cardinals Baseball and KMOX. I need a good Mike Shannon story because you're talking about a larger-than-life figure. Mike Shannon, certainly one of those guys that you know there's some good stories just floating around the atmosphere. Any ones that you can share with us?
I got a chance to produce live at Shannon's, and he had a restaurant, steak and seafood joint right next to the ballpark. And let me just tell you, that right there is the definition of popularity. You can think people like you. You can walk around with confidence. Then you could be Mike Shannon, where there's a live radio show on Friday nights from your restaurant when the Cardinals are in town. And he would stroll in there, and I'd be sitting there. I'd set up all the equipment with the engineer, and I'm all nervous because, you know, I don't know which celeb is going to come in. But he's got guys that, whatever the visiting team would be, at least six or seven of them would come in. And all their food's on the house, all their drinks are on the house. And he would sit there and ask a question. And I remember Chip Carey was in one night. And this is when Chip was a young broadcaster, kind of a rock star, play-by-play guy. And there are like 12 people that are all talking to Mike Shannon while Mike Shannon is interviewing Chip Carey. So he'd be like, so, things in Atlanta really heating up. And Chip would answer it, and then Mike would get away from the mic, and he'd be talking to like three other people. Well, Chip would answer it and keep talking because he didn't know if Mike was listening or not. So Chip would answer the question, and the second he'd stop talking, Mike would dip away from the other conversation that he was having and ask another question. So then Chip would answer that question, and Mike would go back to a different conversation. It was unbelievable, man. And once you saw this great mind at work, you understood why he was who he was. I mean, this man is beloved in St. Louis, and for good reason.
All right, lastly, and I need to know this, how have you been able to avoid Twitter, social media, all these years? And I know you've probably been asked this question before, but just with how everything moves on Twitter, especially with breaking news, I imagine somewhere there is a Greg Amsiger burner account. I don't know, maybe your fake Ken Rosenthal. I just admire it because I don't know how you do it.
Well, I'm proud of my abilities on live TV, okay? And when I got into the industry, that was all I had to hone and all I had to work on. But the one thing that I realized as I continued to, my career continued to grow, was to be at a high level in this, it's time consuming. It just is. And I'm married. I've been married for, in December, 18 years. I have two kids that I adore, and they have busy lives. And the one thing that bothered me about the iPhone was, I met my wife when I was 19 years old. She walked past me. She just walked by me, and I saw her. It is terrifying for me to think that if I was 19 years old in 2019, she would walk by me in a public place, and my head was down. I would never have seen her. So I try to eliminate all the different reasons to have my head down. And I want to live my life. And I get it. I'm not keeping up with the times. I'm not on social media. I was never on Facebook. I was never on any of those platforms, Instagram, Twitter, none of that. Does that mean they don't serve an incredible purpose? Oh, my goodness. We show tweets 5 times every 10 minutes on MLB Tonight. It's all important stuff. I get it. But I just like my life as simple as possible. I host a television show, and then after that, I'm a husband and a dad and a buddy, and I hang out. I try not to be on my phone so much. So, to me, if someone says they're following me, I'm probably calling the cops. I'm not saying thank you. I'm old school that way, I guess.
Make sure you guys are watching Greg on MLB Tonight leading up to and during the postseason. And don't forget, MLB Network is exclusively airing 2 American League Division Series games this postseason. I tried to do that instinctually and reactively. I wanted to channel my inner Greg Amsinger, but I wanted to get it right as well. I will work on that as time goes on. But this was a lot of fun. I enjoyed the conversation. I enjoyed the thoughts. And look forward to doing this again soon, Greg. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Terrific questions, Ben. I would love to do it anytime, man.